Welcome to MGO Podcast 6.20, where we stick to sports, except for a 30-minute segment in the middle of this podcast. It's all about Downton Abbey. Got that mic just how you like it, Ace?
It keeps kind of wandering off to the left. I don't know.
It's sort of like Michigan's defensive rotations.
You know, that's exactly the joke I was going to make.
Boom! Was that better than just saying, look, say hi, Ace? Did that work out better? Am I ruining it right now?
I mean, it was kind of depressing, but yeah, it was still better.
Gallo Streamer, this is the MGO Podcast presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. We'd like to thank the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, the residents in Ann Arbor downtown, Homeshare Lending, and Ann Arbor Elder Law. They are our fine sponsors, and if you do not patronize them, we will stop doing this podcast.
And we'll fight you.
And we'll fight you like we're Washington mods talking about David Long. We will fight you.
That never turns out badly.
So basketball, more of the same, pretty much. Just can't play defense. Like, Michigan's kind of in this game against Iowa, and you just are waiting for them to extend their lead to 10, 11, 12, 13 points. And they do. And then, you know, Michigan puts up a little bit of a fight, but then goes away as they want to do. And it's just more of the same from a basketball team that I got tired of, I don't know, in January.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't say when I checked out on this team, considering I'm still covering them, but...
That's okay. If you say, like, before the season started, then newspapers will offer you a job.
That's true.
Wow!
Upward mobility right there.
We're on fire so far.
We really are. Bring in the zingers.
But I guess we should talk about this, even though, like, I think I know what your answer is going to be, and I know what my answer is. But, like, John Beilein, job security, we should say the things because people keep talking about it.
Yeah, they're not going to fire him, nor should they.
Right.
A shakeup of the assistant coaching staff might be in order.
Uh-huh.
And don't fire him. You'd be crazy.
Well, I agree. But I do think, like, you might kind of see this kind of sputter on for another year or two. And, like, you know, people lose their fastball and circumstances turn against people. And then it's kind of hard to get that momentum back once you've lost it.
Yeah. I mean, if the defense continues to deteriorate the way it has the last couple of years, that's probably what we said a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
to be
but
honest.
There's so much worse at 2-point defense than Rutgers.
Yeah, there are three teams in the entire country among major conference teams that are worse than Michigan at 2-point defense, and none of them is Rutgers, which is bad.
What are those three teams?
They are Illinois, Arizona State, and I posted it in the Slack chat earlier.
Illinois. I mean, Gross really is not working out at all.
No.
He kind of has, like, Mark Dinal as – go ahead.
It's Illinois, Arizona State, and LSU.
LSU. LSU.
Yeah, you know, the team with the number one overall draft pick on the roster and a coach who has no idea how to handle that.
Well, I'm sure he got paid, so I can't really criticize him for his choice.
No.
Because, like, maybe he needs some money, but, man.
He's already clearly checked out on the academic end, and he's ready to enter the NFL or the NBA draft.
Because... Yeah. I mean, guys like Simmons are the main reason that one and done is so terrible. It's just let him go play in the NBA. He has no interest in playing in college. You know, just
yeah. He
let
just
him
pretended
go.
To be a student for a semester, and
yeah, and he's
dominated playing. A bunch of whack SEC players, and now he's gonna.
I mean, kind of dominated. They're not even gonna make the tournament.
If you've watched LSU, you know that's not his fault.
Well, I'm sure it's not his fault. Why? I mean, someone else will pay you, kid. Maybe they couldn't pay him and get him in. I don't know. Sanctions probability with this kid coming through LSU that didn't even get him a tournament bid, like 50-50, right?
I'd say so. And that's only because I don't have much faith in the NCAA actually doing anything.
But anyway, we should, I suppose, continue talking about the Michigan basketball team.
You know, I'm really doing my best to avoid that.
What are we looking at as far as next year? Like, where's the silver lining in our cloudy clouds?
Hopefully that, I don't know, either.
You're going to say something. And what I'm going to say is, like, that's what we were going to think we thought this year. So say it.
The big thing for me is having one of Aubrey Dawkins or Duncan Robinson learn how to play defense, but I'm not super optimistic about that because that's just such a hole in that roster that kind of destroys the team's ability to really defend teams.
Well, I mean, it's such a holistic breakdown. Of course, it starts with the fact that Michigan gets, I think, negative shot blocking. I think they accidentally knocked one in this year. But you know, everybody kind of came around on Mark Dunnall because he was playing better than Ricky Doyle, a lot better than Ricky Doyle.
Yes.
But
it's a big but there.
He wasn't actually playing well defensively, and he never did, and I don't think he ever will. And he doesn't have the size to contest shots. He doesn't have particularly quick feet. You know, people like Diamond Stone get ISO'd on him over and over again, and they're just like, they look at him as a pile of meat to consume. And it's difficult to see that changing because the things that he's not good at defense aren't things where it's like mental, you know? It's just.
Yeah, lateral mobility is a thing you either kind of have or don't. I'm a slightly more optimistic about his ability to at least become half decent on defense than you are, I think.
Yes, you are. I think that's accurate. I mean, Max Bielefeld was Michigan's best center last year, according to some people, not me. I thought it was Doyle. Yeah. But he left, and Michigan took a big step back defensively after playing a 6'6" center for big chunks of last year.
Yeah, I think part of that is just Doyle's inexplicable.
Yeah.
I mean, he's worse than he was as a freshman. He's really demonstrably worse.
He was actually a really promising freshman for a guy who's a three-star coming out of nowhere who has a pretty solid freshman year. I mean, statistically, he was very good at everything except defensive rebounding. And as we've seen this year, like that seems to be at least partially – scheme based, and Michigan is pretty good at defensive rebounding this year, despite having no one individual dominant defensive rebounder who isn't their point guard. So, if you take away that kind of hole in his game, he finished well. He stayed on the floor for most of the time when he wasn't sick. Like he wasn't extraordinarily foul prone for a big. He had a really low turnover rate,
which has like doubled this year.
And he his shooting percentage was terrific. And this year, he just can't catch the ball. And I know the sweaty hands joke is out there, but he had those hands last year and it just didn't happen.
Yeah. No, you hope with the pile of bigs that they have that somebody's going to develop into a useful player. And whether that's Donnell rounding out, at least getting decent enough in defense so that his offensive ability keeps him on the floor. It's Mo Wagner having a breakout or DJ Wilson, something. I mean, that's obviously a huge key for next year.
It's got to be Wagner, right? Like
you think it's – I would think so because Wilson just doesn't seem like he's going to play like a center.
No, he never rolls. He always pops. And that's, I guess, fine. But, like, you got to have a little bit more offensive game than that near the bucket if you're going to play the five.
Yeah.
And we've seen Wagner at times this year. He has displayed an ability to finish impressively with both hands. He has the length. He's both very tall and very long. And you know, he could put it together. But, you know, the general trajectory of bigs the last few years – doesn't fill you with warm, gooey feelings.
No, and the fact that we're already talking about a guy who we thought was going to redshirt this year heading into the season and then played spot minutes kind of just to see whether maybe he was better than the terrible lineup of centers that they were throwing out there and hoping that he's going to be that guy next year and just having to start over again with another young center instead of actually being able to benefit from an upperclassman center would be a blow.
But I don't think that he's going to push through Dunnall. I think Dunnall.
No, I don't think so either.
And so then you've got Dunnall, and Dunnall has his upsides and then his downsides. You know, it'd be one thing if he was a shooter, but he's not.
No, as we saw pretty clearly with that late attempt against Iowa.
Where he just threw it right off the backboard. And I was
held his form on that one, too. That was not pretty.
And I'm looking at him and I'm looking at Vito Brown, who's like a 36-38% three-point shooter this year on a decent number of looks. And I'm just like, man, like that's the pick and pop stuff. Like if he could actually do that, then you might have enough there to offset his defensive deficiencies. But without it, I just don't see it. Cause a lot of the, you know, he has a 25-point game or whatever. Like how many of those are just bunnies? Like almost all of them.
Yeah. I mean, his best games, not coincidentally, tended to coincide with Zach Irvin and Derek Walton's best games at getting to the basket.
Yeah, and so he catches the ball and then he finishes at the hoop. And he finishes okay, but I don't think he's, you know, he misses his fair share of bunnies. He doesn't have the lift to dunk it. So upside there I think is just limited.
Yeah.
And then if you look at the rest of the team, you've got Walton, who's a good player, but he's also shooting like 33% from two, which is, I mean, woof.
Yeah, against top 100 teams this year. 31%.
I don't know if it's the foot injury that has like permanently robbed him of some of his explosion. Cause I remember, you know,
his freshman year, he finished tough shots at the basket. He didn't have a great shooting percentage from two, but it was well above what it is right now.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the degradation of the offense around him. I mean, the one bright spot, I guess, is Mar or Rock.
Yes.
Rock is cooler.
Yeah. I like Rock.
Rock is cooler. Yeah. of course, Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman, who's developing into a guy who can get his own shot. And about halfway through this year, we saw a Zach Ervin progression where he went from a complete black hole in offense to a guy who will occasionally pass the ball usefully.
Yes, his assist rate climbed out of the single digits. And
he does not seem like a completely miserable defensive player, although we have seen him late on a lot of closeouts.
Yeah.
I just think there's
nobody who's blameless on this team when it comes to defense.
I mean, everybody is late on all the closeouts, so I don't put that so much on Rahman. I think that's just a symptom of coaching.
Yeah, he certainly seems to be the best on the team at keeping a guy in front of him.
Yes.
Which is an important part of defending in basketball.
And he's a bit older, which is kind of a harsh, not a harsh, it's kind of an unfortunate thing when we're looking at his upside, but
yeah, you don't know how much more development there's going to be there. But
he's clearly getting better. Yeah. He added a decent 3-point shot this year. Like, you know, he wasn't shooting a great percentage. What is he at right now?
He's at 32% on the season.
Yeah, so he was at like 25 or something last year on like no attempts. So he's inching up there. And I think he went 0 for 6 against Iowa. So before that.
Yes, he did go 0 for 6 against Iowa.
So before that, he was actually doing pretty well. And then Iowa was just like, hey, we're huge and you're not. And screw you, buddy.
That was basically that game in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Had in a couple terrible inbounds passes.
It's amazing how Iowa always seems to have one point guard and then 4 6-9 guys.
Yep.
Like, I understand, like, Michigan.
Although Anthony Clemens is chilling out here like, hey, man.
All right, yes, but Anthony Clemens does exist. But my point is that Iowa always has, like.
Yeah, they've got Bear and Ewell coming off the bench in addition to all their guys.
Enormous dudes.
Yeah.
And before that, they had, like, Basabe and they had Olesani.
Yeah.
At the same time, they had Woodbury and.
Yeah, no, they've had a lot of large people. I mean, having Utoff at the four as a guy who can play.
He plays the three sometimes.
Yeah, he can play 3 through 5.
They have like a 6'9" 2-guard when Jock plays the 2-guard.
Yeah. I don't think Jock's quite that tall.
He's like, maybe he's 6'8", but he's a big boy.
He's 6'6".
No, he's longer. He's got long arms.
He's lanky.
He's lanky.
I positioned my microphone perfectly, by the way.
I threw a postcard at him. So, I mean, are we getting in the tournament here, Mr. Bubble Watch?
Not unless they beat Northwestern and Indiana. And
seriously?
Seriously. Michigan's out of the field right now.
No, they're not.
And they are out of the field by pretty much every projection. And beating Northwestern just is not going to do a whole lot on that front. And that's before you account for any bid stealers in conference tournaments, which, you know, burst a couple bubbles there. And I think you're looking at a Big Ten tournament where Michigan's got to beat Indiana.
This is so amateur.
I would love to be more optimistic because guess who does not want to cover NIT home games? I'm going to make a lot of myself.
I'm going to make you get there like 2 hours early and interview everybody who's there. Like you're gonna have like a.
I'm just gonna walk up to fans and be like, "Why are you here?
You're supposed to be. You're like, all right. So here my strategy with hiring people is that I was supposed to hire like nice people. And this is you're breaking down. This basketball team is breaking you down.
They're getting these last 2 years, man.
And there was the whole like building. Book learning like thing. Like,
oh come on, the SEC deserved the hell out of that. I'm not even going to apologize for such things.
So what I'm saying is that there is room for a certain, let's say, hard edge in our writing,
yes.
And I occupy all of that room.
Well, that's limiting.
Yes, but that's why I'm the boss, because I get to say that. So do you
want to start jumping into the comments of basketball posts then?
Have you been doing that?
No, hell no.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. You don't have anything nice to say. Don't say it in the comments.
I'm trying not to read them. I'm failing.
Are you?
A little bit.
Well, Michigan goes on their run and they cut it to 5, and then Zach Ervin gets an offensive rebound or something, some sort of broken play, and it was like 25 seconds on the shot clock or whatever, and he takes an absolute garbage shot. He takes a contested 18-footer off the dribble.
Early in the clock.
And I'm just like, that was kind of the point which I was like, all right, this isn't happening. I mean, they made the run, but then they do these things. And I'm like, you can't be that inefficient. You just can't. And I think that when you have this well-oiled machine like the Stauskas years, you know, Stauskas would take like a couple of those right at the beginning of the game just to like show you his nuts. And then they wouldn't take any of those except in like late clock situations where you kind of have to.
Yeah, when you need to like drill one of those over Nigel Hayes to win a game or something.
Yeah, and just redisplay said nuts.
Yes.
But I think when you have an offense that is kind of clunky here, doesn't really get consistent penetration and doesn't force defenses into rotations, you just kind of get in the habit of like, this seems like a better shot than it actually is because we take so many of them. And I feel like we see a number of those. Although Irvin does kind of have Tim Hardaway disease somewhat as well.
A little bit.
A little bit.
I mean,
not as bad as
we remember freshman Zach Irvin. He's a chucker at heart.
Yeah, but if he's going to have a shot percentage of like 28 and all of those are threes that he knocks down at like a 42% clip, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that was perfectly fine. In that offense, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
And the quality of shots aren't the same that he's getting right now.
I understand he has to generate more and that's kind of gets in your head, but it just bothers me, and it kind of goes back to the reason Michigan's so bad at defense is that was a really bad decision. And Michigan makes a bunch of those on defense, and I think that maybe just the decision-making on this team as a whole is not where it was during the years where Michigan was real good at basketball.
That, and they're also just – I mean, when they've had these historically great offenses under Beilein, they've had people who can create off the dribble and finish at the basket. So you had Trey Burke breaking down guys off the dribble and forcing defenses to rotate.
Nistauskas was incredible as a pick-and-roll player.
Yeah, Stauskas was an amazing pick-and-roll guy. With Irvin, I mean, Mike Cassell straight up picked his pocket clean towards the end of that game.
He got good.
He is iffy handling the ball going towards the basket.
No, I mean Cassell got good.
Oh, yeah, Cassell did get good. That was, I mean, he turned out much better than I would have expected. But, you know, he picks Irvin clean in a critical position where Irvin's not even trying to make a move. He's just, you know, dribbling at the top of the key and gets swiped, which is something that would never happen to Burke or Stauskas. And Walton can sometimes get by guys, but he absolutely cannot finish at the rim the last 2 years. Rockman's the only guy who's really shown that ability to beat guys off the dribble, and he's not a well-rounded offensive player right now. So you're just really stuck in, Robinson and Dawkins are either slumping or just so bad at defense that it doesn't matter how good they are at shooting.
And none of those guys can really make their own shot.
Yeah, so you just have this offense where there's not the creator that you need to let the rest of those pieces kind of fit in around them.
We shouldn't dump on the offense that much. I mean, they are still very efficient per Kempom.
Well, that's true, but it's a drop off from where it was, and that's making it so that the rather atrocious defense, which has also dropped off, is not getting offset at all.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan was like number one in the stats this year. What are they right now?
They're 28th.
28th. Wow, that's a bigger drop than I thought.
Yeah.
Like, I looked at it a couple weeks ago, and they were 18th.
They've been slowly sinking towards, I mean, these last five games or so.
Well, I was going to say that like the difference between 1 and 18 is probably the difference between like 100 and 145th with the defense has gone. So they've both kind of degraded as much. The offense is still much better. Yeah.
Defense is up to 132.
All right, let's talk about hockey. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Let's just replay the basketball section for hockey. God damn.
Same old.
They get swept by Ohio State. I have no idea what happened in the Sunday game because it wasn't on TV in any way whatsoever.
They periscoped overtime from the rafters. I saw the overtime goal.
Yeah,
I didn't see
that. Michigan falls behind in that game 5-1. They tie it up. They have a go-ahead goal waved off because, of course, and then they lose it in overtime. And then on Friday, Michigan goes up 2-0 with a couple of pretty goals and then just completely falls apart, ends up down 6-2.
That's not good.
They scrape a couple goals back and then they give up an empty netter. And that was just a complete crap show all around. And the problem, I mean, you think you're past it, you know. You think like, okay, they went and had a series against Minnesota on Olympic ice, and I didn't think that they played badly on defense. I thought, you know, there was the occasional issue here and there, but overall, the chances Minnesota got were either relatively harmless, like say from center ice, or that they had actually been generated by Minnesota being very skillful with the puck and in an environment where Michigan is not as familiar with the situation as Minnesota is.
Plus, on a larger rink, you're probably more prone to giving up odd man rushes.
And I thought those were good competitive games, and Michigan should have won both of them, except that Racine kind of coughed up a hairball on the second one. And then that is the end of probably a month's worth of games where Michigan, like, Downing isn't doing things that look insane. You're seeing DeJong kind of come along as a guy who's a good pair with him. It just feels like they are making progress towards a team that can hold it up on defense long enough for the CCM line to outscore. And then this series happens, and it's just like all the worst things that have happened over the past 4 years. And I mean, at this point, they're in the tournament. There's no question about that. So let's hopefully try to lock it down over the next couple weekends insofar as even possible. And then it's just a crapshoot.
Prepare for Hockey Plinko.
Yeah. And, you know, it used to be that having Hockey Plinko was a terrible thing, but now Hockey Plinko is like, okay.
Fine by us.
This doesn't feel like a team that is much different from any of the previous Mel-free Red teams, with those sole exception of the fact that they have the best line, possibly in the Red Berenson era. Now, Brendan Morrison is probably going to get mad at me, but if you adjust for era effects,
yeah,
they got a case. Although Brendan Morrison is probably whatever line he was on for the last 3 years,
it was good.
It was him. And then there was like Hensick and Hilbert. That was a good setup there.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they have this incredible line on the top, and they're like plus 35 or something for the season. They have a ridiculous plus minus, and then the rest of the team is just kind of trundling along. And the defensemen are all kind of positive, but I just feel like that's a effect of getting to play with the CCM line. So, given that it's pretty much an open secret at this point that Red Berenson is going to retire, and given what we've seen over the past 4 years, it's got to be Mel Pearson.
One would hope. I mean, especially when you add in what Mel Pearson's done at Michigan Tech.
Yeah, I posted a graph of just wins per year on the blog for Michigan and Tech, and that's a really crude measure, but that's the only measure you need.
It really is.
Because
it's quite stark.
It is, and I was going to put a vertical line that says Mel Pearson departs for Michigan Tech.
It was very unnecessary.
It's already on the graph.
Yeah.
And they went to the tournament for the first time since 1981 last year. Think about that. They hadn't been in the tournament in 35 years.
That is more years than I've been alive.
Damn it, Ace.
Significantly.
Yeah. Damn it, Ace. And then this year they win the WCHA regular season title for the first time in 4 years. And I know the WCHA is no longer what the WCHA was for most of Tech's tenure in that league. But still, to win a conference title in Houghton, Michigan.
Had to think for a moment just to even remember what Michigan Tech was.
I know where it is. I've actually driven quite close to it.
Was that supposed to make it better? I've driven in the same general area.
Yeah, I've driven.
I did not see a reason to stop.
I drove through the entirety of the Upper Peninsula once, and it was woody.
Yeah,
we'll say that it was woody. But to win a conference title at this school, and to immediately show up, and first of all, you know, he gets there and they get instantly better. They won, I think, 4 or 6 games the year before he shows up. He shows up, they win 16. And they're kind of in this holding pattern where Mel has made them as good as they can be for their talent level. And then as soon as he actually gets his recruits in, and this is recruiting to Michigan Tech, right? The place that is farther away from Ann Arbor than New York City. And it doesn't have an airplane. I think you have to like take a sled there to be able to recruit sufficient talent to this school to get to the tournament and to maintain that. Like, You know, they're on the bubble right now. I looked up in the simulations. They're probably like 62% to make the tournament. But back-to-back tournament bids for Michigan Tech after 35 years of drought, that's all you need to know, especially when you couple it with the fact that Michigan dropped off immensely once he was replaced with Brian Wiseman. And I don't think necessarily that Wiseman is the problem. I just think that he's not obviously the solution. And Spath, Mike Spath, who's basically the only Michigan hockey beat writer, the most plugged-in guy about hockey, the reason to have a rival subscription mm-hmm. if you're a hockey fan, has been putting out lists. And the lists change a lot, which makes me think that they're not really internalists, because how could they be? Because Ward Manuel has just been hired. So before this, there hasn't really been any way to bounce this off someone. But the two consistent guys are the red guys, and those are Wiseman and Mel Pearson. And you cannot hire Wiseman. Not after this weekend, not after the last 4 years. And I'm sure that Wiseman is going to be a guy who might develop into a head coach. But when you have Mel Pearson sitting out there, and I've been told that Mel Pearson would come back and wouldn't even think twice about it. When you have that guy and you have a pretty good idea that you can keep Wiseman, because if he is recruiting really well, Michigan is recruiting well,
yeah,
despite the fact that most of these recruits know for a fact that they're not going to get coached by Red Berenson for 1 minute. So maybe he is really holding that together. He can continue on as a Michigan assistant. And if he goes and he does the same thing where he goes and turns around a program and looks like a real high-quality hockey coach, well, then at that point—
You bring him back into the fold when Pearson's retiring.
When Pearson's retiring, because Pearson is 57.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if he was 47, I don't think this would even be a conversation. Like, this would be like Mel Pearson, end of story. I still think that's going to be what it is, because he has a combination of familiarity with the culture and obvious coaching jobs.
And you've got a Michigan. It's not like Michigan needs to rebuild. They are stocked with talent.
Exactly. And if Mel Pearson comes in next year and does what he did to Tech in terms of making them better on the ice.
Michigan is a rampaging hell beast.
Yes. Michigan is a one seed. So it's not, you know, if it was a 57-year-old guy coming in and he was taking over a 3-9 type football program, yeah, that's a major concern, because what's your upside at the end of that tenure? What we know is that Mel Pearson is a badass hockey coach right now, and Michigan needs a badass hockey coach right now. So
hire Mel Pearson.
Hire Mel Pearson. I'm so worried that it's not going to be Mel now, just because people are talking about it like it's not a slam dunk. I was expecting at this point that Spath would be like, it's going to be Mel, because obviously, because everything falls into place. Everything is wonderful. The one guy out there who I think I could probably live with is the Providence coach. His name is Nate Lehman, because he turned who was it? It was Union. He made Union into a NCAA program, and they had a couple of years where they were really, really good. And now he's done the same at Providence. Providence won the national title last year, although that was pretty fluky. There was a goaltending gaffe late in that game that was just unbelievable. But he's the kind of guy who I would be looking at if Mel wasn't on the table. But even that guy, you know, he's recruiting 20-year-olds. He's recruiting 21-year-olds. It's a totally different way to live. And it's possible that he would smoothly fit in and just be able to recruit, you know, everybody the way Michigan recruits and have that talent and then coach that talent. But you never know. Because when Michigan State hired Rick Comley, Comley was a pretty good hockey coach in a similar situation at Northern Michigan, where he was recruiting overagers. And when he came down to Michigan State, he recruited exactly like he did at Northern Michigan.
And now Michigan State is the program that they are.
Yes. So having a guy like Mel, who's been around the national team program, who can recruit those kids and has recruited like red recruits, I think makes for a much smoother transition. Also, he is a badass hockey coach. I can talk about this for another hour and a half.
I know.
Hire Mel Pearson. Hire Mel Pearson. As far as this year goes, just make the tournament and see what happens. And hopefully we can send Red out on a positive note, because the man has built this program from scratch. I want them to name something after him. I kind of want them to rename Yost to be the Berenson Ice Arena.
But then what do you name after Yost? Because you got to name something.
I know. But like, it just seems like something needs to be named after him. Maybe if they do my World Cup style Michigan hockey tournament, they can name the trophy after him.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a, you know, Berenson rink at Yost Ice Arena or something like that.
I just think that's such a cop out.
It is a cop out, but they're running out of names to put, or things to put names on, I should say, at least that are of the stature that you'd want to have to honor Berenson.
Yeah. You know, it's a nice thing that they built that field house, and that was Oosterbaan Field House. But yeah. Now it sucks, because I want that to be Yost Field House and then Berenson Ice Arena. Sorry, Oosterbaan.
Oosterbaan Field at Yost Fieldhouse. Doesn't work. You don't want the practice field.
No, I don't. I don't.
Bearing your name.
That always sounds like something that's been sponsored by Invesco or whatever.
It does.
When it was like blah, blah field at Mile High, because everybody was like, why don't we call it the best thing a stadium in this country has ever been called? And then but they had to sell the rights because NFL teams are rapacious.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, let's run some ads.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest from Homeshare Lending. By now, you've probably read about my company on MGO blog, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the most important people in my life, my sons Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
I'm 7.5.
Colby, how old are you?
I'm 5.
Okay, boys, I have 3 really important questions to ask you. Who's your favorite team?
Michigan.
Who's going to win the big game?
The Wolverines.
And if you could buy or refinance a house with any company, who would you use?
Homeshare Lending.
Good boys. Homeshare Lending, 855-6-BE-SURE. Visit us online if that works better for you. HomeshareLending.com. HomeSure Lending.com. We've helped Brian, Seth, and a bunch of readers buy or refinance their homes, and we'd love to help you too. All right, only thing left to do. Boys, can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue.
Homeshare Lending, NMLS number 1161358. Again, give us a call, 855-6-BE-SURE.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Indoors, and you've got like a hoodie thing on.
We have established that I am
is
the
that working
blog
for you?
Hipster.
So is that, yeah, is that
yeah, it is. It's working really well.
It is.
I'm comfortable. Feeling pretty good.
Do you feel like you have an aura?
Not particularly.
No.
Nah.
But you feel good.
I give off a bit of a vibe.
But you're like too cool for Whole Foods. You have to go to like Plum Market.
I shop at Kroger, man. You're not paying me enough for that shit.
I know, but you give off a vibe. Arbor Farms Market, where Arbor Farms go to market. They are not a sponsor, although if you'd like to be.
Yeah, well, come to think of it.
If you were just so impressed by the way I said the name of your store. Anyway, you're not wearing a shirt. I mean, you are wearing a shirt.
I am wearing a shirt.
But say something. Potato.
Potato. That is the theme of the shirt that I am not actually wearing. But
we should tell Rishi that this segment just really isn't working. It's not. It's
no, it doesn't work.
This is bad podcast.
It is.
All right. But get shirts at Underground Printing.
Yes. Including the Aspire Potato shirt,
Aspire
which is hilarious,
shirt.
And I definitely wanted it, and yes. It's now sitting in front of me, and I will wear it at some point.
Yes.
I now have 3 different MGO blog shirts that are Ohio-themed. And so, because I have the Worst State Ever shirt.
Sure.
I have the More Perfect Union shirt, and now the Aspire shirt. There might be a bit of an obsession there. There might be some, might be a little hypocritical.
We're
but,
supposed
know.
To be like obsessed.
Yeah.
But we're, not, I mean, like relative levels of obsession.
And also, none of those shirts are untrue. So
that's true.
Yeah. So I think standing by truth, I'm sticking with
it. We should talk about spring practice now. We thought it was
should.
A bad segment.
It was
and then
a bad
we kept
segment.
Doing the segment.
Tried to salvage it. Didn't really work.
Yeah, you didn't salvage it.
No. Thanks.
All right. Our gimmicky top 5 this week is colors of poop from your baby. No, it's not.
Crap, I need a new list.
Hey. We're making kind of a hybrid list here of things that will seem the dumbest or most inaccurate insider ramblings after we start the season.
These are things that we may or may not have seen already.
Yes. So
some of them are made up. Some of them might have hit message boards near you.
Some of them are projected to be said down the line in the future. Some of them have already been said. The cutoff for this was the bowl game. After the bowl game, everything is fair game. And we're just – because last year's insider ramblings were not at all accurate.
Nope. Lawrence Marshall has still not appeared anywhere.
So we're anticipating the things that we are going to be looking back after this football season and saying, well, that was wrong. Issue number five.
Ian Bunting is the worst.
That is also my number five. We did hear this. We mentioned it on the blog because there was a lot of positive chatter about Ian Bunting during the first four spring practices. And that happened kind of incredibly quickly after Rivals put inside the fort that his star was falling and that they didn't know if he was ever going to play at all.
It was harsh for an insider piece.
You really rarely see people called out that directly, and I was taken aback. And then immediately afterwards, everybody's like, Ian Bunting, Ian Bunting, Ian Bunting, Ian Bunting, Ian Bunting, Rashawn Gary. Anyway. I was most excited to see old Skillet Hands play for Jim Harbaugh. That was kind of a momentary bump in the road, and now it seems like it's back on plan. I don't expect that he's going to break out in a huge way this year just because, you know, he's not really an A.J. Williams type.
Yeah, he's that flex type, and Jake Butt's there.
But I think you're going to see him get into, like, the 15-catch territory, and everybody is going to have him as the heir apparent for Jake Butt next year.
Yeah, I agree, which is why that is my number five.
Issue number four.
This is a take I expect to hear, which is that Ryan Glasgow is barely clinging to a starting spot.
Which is something that we kind of heard last year when Brian Monet was impressing a great deal.
Yes.
And everybody was like, he's really going to do it. And I was like, dude, I watched Glasgow play the year before. For a true sophomore to pass him would be quite a trick. And then what we saw from Glasgow this year, where he's basically Mike Martin with a little bit less heft. But basically, Mike Martin.
We are starting to run out of caveats with the Mike Martin comparison.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And he has the injury, and Michigan's defense immediately goes in the tank. I expect the same thing.
He's going to start at nose. There's not any question about
that. Right. But I expect people talking about how, like, it could happen. Like, Monet could pass him because they have to defend the things that they have to do.
Brian Monet is very talented. It is going to be an excellent backup nose tackle who gets a lot of rotation snaps.
Yes. And there's no such thing as a backup nose tackle, really. Until you get to the third string.
That is true.
My number four is Rashawn Gary will start, which I expect to hear, but I don't expect him to get like the nod on the depth chart just because of the way teams work. You get the hotshot recruit coming in and he can really get after it. But Michigan has zero holes on their starting defensive line. They have Chris Wormley at the strong side end, which is Rashawn Gary's most natural position at this juncture. They have Mo Hurst. I think we'll move to three tech and he will be your starting three tech. Mo Hurst was really good last year when not doubled, and moving to three tech will help that. And I think Rashawn Gary is going to play a butt ton of snaps, but I think he is going to be behind those guys in the pecking order.
Especially since with Gary, you can slot him in at three or four different spots on the line.
You can get him his snaps, but also kind of keep that carrot in front of his nose where it's like, I got to get to the top of that depth chart. Got to get to the top of that history. I would make this a holy lock. Because we're going to hear this. I would make this a holy lock, except for the fact that this is a Jim Harbaugh team and not a Lloyd Carr team. And Harbaugh is the kind of guy, like, you know, if
you're good enough,
if you're
going
to
play.
You're going to be where you're supposed to be on the depth chart. I just think that for in year one, those guys will keep their nose ahead of him.
Well, and especially since the one position where there is, I guess, a little bit – I could see him starting over Taco Charlton, but weak side end is probably not the best fit for Gary. And because I don't see Wormley getting displaced at strong side end, certainly not. And Hurst seems like too good a bet at three tech, and then knows it's not where Gary's going to play as a freshman. So
yeah, well, I think you're going to see Gary play both strong side end and three tech and be kind of the primary backup at both spots.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I mean, yeah, weak side end is just a weird fit for him, and that's kind of the spot where I could see somebody.
Yeah, and I am kind of worried that someone's going to be like, let's move Chris Wormley to three tech. And I don't want to see that happen. I mean, the only problem is, like, so you have eight guys right now. You have the starters, you have Godin, you have Gary, have Monet, and then you have somebody from the pack of weak side end. So those are your eight guys. Godin's a strong side end. He does not play well when he plays three tech because he gets blown up too much. So what do you do then? Do you move Wormley inside? Because you want a second three tech. Who is that? Is that Gary?
Gary.
Because I don't want to see Wormley ever do anything except destroy tight ends.
Yeah.
He destroys tight ends. And
it's beautiful to watch. And he has good moves off the edge, too. He is
He's not great, but he's good enough.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that there was a more natural, like if Godin could actually play 3 tech, that would be great.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Asia number 3.
Shane Morris is totally in this thing.
My number 3 is Brandon Peters is totally in this thing.
I feel like that's a shot at me, actually.
Yes, you should. But I do expect to hear that Brandon Peters is like really in the running for a job, and I'm just like, no, it's not happening. Because true freshman quarterbacks are a nightmare, and you just never want to do it.
Yeah.
Brandon Peters has said that, like, you know, if it comes down to the red shirt, he's going to take it, and he's just not even going to complain about it because he knows. You know, you saw Michigan try to get red shirts on every quarterback they possibly could last year, which I think is going to be a strategy going forward. I think you're going to see quarterbacks, especially early enrolling quarterbacks, after 3 years, if they're not in the conversation for a starting job, grad transfer.
Yeah, they have a degree, and they can go.
So I just really think that Brandon Peters is going to be talked up as a potential threat for the job, but the chances that he actually sees the field this year are approximately 0%. Shane Morris, go. I mean, did you have anything else to say about Shane Morris? No.
Not really.
No, that was just it.
I mean,
I don't expect to hear that. I don't actually think anyone will say that anymore. I think that'll be.
I'm expecting at least, you know. We've gotten some oddball stuff in preseason predictions, and I think I think somebody is going to be wowed by Shane Morris's arm because when you watch him throw occasionally, it looks incredible.
Yeah.
And then he'll bury one into a linebacker's chest.
Yeah.
But they might miss that one, and then they'd think that Shane Morris is starter quality.
All right. All right. That's enough of an explanation. Asia number 2.
Ben Gedeon is Joe Bolden, but this will be presented as a positive thing.
We are actually close on this. My number 2 is no linebacker drop off, where they say like there won't be any drop off from last year because those guys sucked.
That's wrong, at least in the case of one guy.
But let's go with yours first.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I have hope that Ben Gedeon is going to be good, but I've even seen him described on a certain message board as a poor man's Joe Bolden, and that thought is terrifying. And somebody is going to present it like having this very inconsistent guy who can't take on blocks is a positive.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's what Gedeon is going to be, but that's what Bolden was, and that's the main comparison between Gedeon and Bolden. And I don't know what Gedeon's going to turn out as, but if it's Joe Bolden, that's not a positive.
A poor man's Joe Bolden is
oof.
I mean, he wasn't the worst.
No.
Like, he was okay-ish.
But he was never what he was supposed to
be. No, but and like when that's like your description, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
But mine is more based on the fact that even though I was never a huge fan of Bolden's game, and I was a huge fan of Desmond Morgan except against Minnesota, I think you take that much experience off the field and you put them in a new system and you only have like one guy who's even like kind of experienced at all, I think you might see Ben Gedeon play like Joe Bolden. And then I think whoever plays where Desmond Morgan played is not going to be as good, except against Minnesota. And I just, you know, you hope that Michigan gets away with it because their defensive line will be absolutely rampant. And then you can have a lawn chair at middle linebacker, as Desmond Morgan could have been against, I think, BYU.
Yes.
Where he was not a lawn chair, but if Michigan had decided to play 10-on-11, they still would have won that game with a shutout.
That was a really fun game.
It was. It was a nice game. But I just think that there is going to be a step back there, and it's going to burn Michigan at some point. I'm not counting Jabril Peppers in here, even though he's talking about being a Sam, which I think is a real thing.
Yeah.
I think that is a very real thing. But the inside linebacker spots, I think there will be a step back. And people will try to deny that because they're going to say that the linebackers are faster, which is like 20th on my list of important linebacker traits. It's like tailback. Like your absolute flat-out speed really isn't that important. Linebacker is more about not taking a false step.
Yeah.
All right. Issue number 1.
I fully expect to see some people talk about Jabril Peppers as an undersized Sam that goes to show why this linebacker core is just kind of in trouble. And I think they're not going to understand the difference between like a traditional like Sean Crable-ish Sam and the hybrid space player Sam that Jabril Peppers is going to be, because his role is not really going to change that much from last year, except he'll be in the box a little bit more, but he's still going to cover slot receivers and murder screens and blitz off the edge. And
yeah, although
he's not Sean Crable.
He didn't really do a lot of like blitzing last year.
Not a ton, but they did have him do that every once in a while.
I think that might have that might be because Michigan played so many spread teams, so he had to go murder all the screens.
Yeah. And murder them he did.
And it is interesting that the Sams that they are talking about on this defense are Peppers and Furbush.
Two very different players.
Yeah. I mean, Furbush, I think at this point we're hoping he's filled out to like 230, 240. His weight is an eternal mystery.
Remember when he was supposedly too big coming in? He's the weirdest weight fluctuating recruit of all time.
Yeah. Whenever the phone books come in, we're always like, Furbush, what happened to Furbush? So I think you're going to see different packages for him, and I think we are going to see him back at boundary corner when Michigan is in a 4-3, depending on exactly what's going on and how well like the two safeties are playing, the two safeties who didn't take Richards. My number one is Michigan's going to cut Kyle Kalis, which has already happened.
I was very close to putting that on my list, but
– which has already happened. Which was just absurd the instant I heard it. This was actually – this came before the cutoff, I think.
It did.
Did it?
I think.
I don't know. It's still here anyway, but they were talking
and
about
– And you can still predict it for happening this offseason too.
Sure. So, I think at this point it's probably impossible just because we know what the roster looks like. But there was an inside the fort that was like, we think that Michigan might not bring back one of their senior fifth-year starters on the offensive line. And then they doubled down on that by specifically naming Kalis a couple weeks later. And I was just like, there's no way. One, look at the depth chart on offensive line.
Two, try to think of another time where that has ever freaking happened.
Yeah. I think the theory there was that they were going to recruit like John DeLance and maybe the Davis kid out of Maryland. And then those guys would allow them to cut a fifth-year senior, three-year starter.
Yeah, let's take a true freshman and stick him in there. Sure.
I mean, as far as implausible things I've ever heard go, that is like up there with a bullet. I mean, up there.
Way up there.
Way up there. Do we have another segment? Are we doing another segment? What's it about? Spring football.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's
Salvation Army. Do you?
I don't.
You should.
I definitely should.
My wife does.
Save me money.
My wife buys all her clothes. Spring practice. We've only had four of them, but it does seem
we haven't learned that much since the last one.
But no, we haven't, but it does seem like we are getting, one, a ton more access.
They actually let reporters watch practice. My God.
Yeah, and this is a time where it makes perfect sense for them to do that. But I think that a sea change has occurred here where Michigan went in the submarine in fall camp. And even in Harbaugh's first spring, they were pretty closed off. They were bowish.
Yeah.
And this is a completely different regime. This is probably even a little bit more open than Rich, which people will probably not use to gin up a completely fake NCAA scandal.
Certainly not.
Against Rich and still have a job for some reason. But I don't think we're going to see this continue through fall just because I bet the submarine comes back. But it's pretty awesome just to have a coach who's like, oh, yeah, reporters, fans.
You know, when they asked Harbaugh, the reporters asked him at the end of the Florida practices whether there'd be open practice in Ann Arbor, and he was like, no.
Yeah.
that's the end of that.
Right. But still, you got a week of great access, and I thought it was pretty successful in spreading the word about the program around.
There, and there was a 15-minute segment on SportsCenter before they'd ever really even snapped the ball.
And treating Michigan's fans like they are something other than dollar cows to be milked. So thumbs up for that. Also thumbs up for a lot of the chatter coming out. Obviously, they weren't in pads very much, so it's mostly skeleton and that kind of stuff. But a couple of things that I thought were pretty meaningful were how good Tyrone Wheatley looked as a receiver.
Yes.
And you kind of – you don't know how he's going to be as a blocker, but he had a rep as a really excellent blocker as a recruit. That was actually the best thing about him as a recruit, especially on offense. And just to see those like little vines and videos of him looking pretty smooth in pass routes, and then reports from Sam Webb and other people who were down there to the effect of like, this guy can at least do what A.J. Williams did last year in the pass game and maybe a little bit more than that. You put that – on a redshirt freshman who's like 280, 290, who can really move people, and you give him 4 years of Harbaugh instead of the one A.J. Williams got, and I think that's a player who might not be, you know, out-and-out Jake Butt-type star because a lot of what he does is blocking, and people don't get credit for that. But he could be a guy who really makes Michigan's offense into a juggernaut.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, you know, if Michigan's going to try to be sort of Big Ten Alabama in terms of their style of play, Alabama's always had these, like, ginormous tight ends who are – primarily blockers. They always seem to have the second tight end on the roster who maybe only catches a handful of passes, but then you see him run power and it's like, who is that dude blocking a guy into oblivion?
Yeah.
And it's one of their handful of tight ends who weighed 280 pounds and just mauls people. I could see Wheatley turning into that and hopefully with some catching upside too.
Yeah. I mean, Michigan got, what, 14 some catches out of A.J. Williams? They tripled his year to date.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And to get that from a second or third tight end is really helpful, especially when he can move people. So there were, you know, early in the year in the Utah game, they threw it to A.J. Williams a couple times, and I was like, why are they throwing it to A.J. Williams? And I was like, they got to do it. Like, when you don't do it, you saw the kind of stuff that happened to Hoke's teams, where they just regard him as an extra offensive lineman, and then he's not a very good one. So you have a safety who's just in your face as soon as the running back gets to the gap. So that was one, and then, of course, bunting is the other, because the butt apparent, that doesn't sound as good as air apparent.
No.
The apparent butt. Is that, well, no.
You just switched the order of the words around.
Yes, I did.
Still pretty much the same thing.
That's the joke. But it's really good to hear that Ian Bunting was performing and performing really well.
Yes.
And snagging one-handed catches with his enormous skillet-type hands. So that, and then we heard about Amir Mitchell, who is a burly gentleman who might not redshirt, although it did sound like his routes were a little unpolished and he was fighting the ball somewhat.
Yeah, there was a clip where he got beat on a route by Rion Dawson. Which does not portend good things for this year.
Yes. So this is a guy who people thought could be a safety or maybe even a linebacker. And there are six receivers in this class. Only two of them are on campus. Is it two? Or is it just one? I think it's just one.
I think it's just one right now.
So there's only one of them on campus right now. So you don't really know what those other five guys are going to get you. I kind of expect him to redshirt because Michigan isn't going to need him this year. And you might want to preserve that. Although he could be a useful special teams player. Either way, I think that the earlier turns on Mitchell are pretty much what you would expect.
Good athlete, a little bit unpolished.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really good athlete, actually, but needs a lot of seasoning.
Yes.
We haven't heard anything about the running backs for obvious reasons because
– skeleton drills.
Yeah, no pads. As far as the quarterbacks go, it does sound like, you know, John O'Korn's the man.
Apparently with the – you know, he hasn't worked out all of the wild man things that – him fall out of favor in Houston.
No, that was never going to happen. Like,
so,
he's going to throw some picks next year.
Yes,
but one of the things that I thought was most interesting is that Sam Webb was like he was by far the most athletic of the quarterbacks, which is a nice thing to be at 6'4".
Yes,
because Harbaugh does like his quarterbacks to have some giddy up. You know, he doesn't want him to be Denard, but Andrew Luck ran for like 600, 800 yards a year.
Yeah, when you've got the pile of running backs that Michigan has, plus the threat of Jarrell Peppers on offense, and there's a lot that you can start to do with the running game if you've got a quarterback with some mobility.
Yeah. So O'Korn does bring that, and he brings the mobility to get outside the pocket. He's at 6'4". A lot of the best things he did at Houston were scramble drills where he would just be on the run and casually flick it about 40 yards downfield. So obviously has all the physical intangibles.
as his high school coach said, he had the physical intangibles. Why even have a language? Why not? Why just grunt?
He's literally got the physical intangibles.
And then the gentry move to tight end just screams it's O'Horn's job and everybody knows it, because that's a guy who is a highly touted quarterback who has had some chatter, very positive about him. And for him to move to tight end when there's even the hint of a real quarterback competition, I think is unrealistic.
Yeah, I agree.
Good take, Ace.
Yep.
Well done.
That's why I'm here.
Do you have anything else that you would like to offer about spring practice?
I did find it encouraging that Mike McCray is playing.
That's a good one.
And on top of that, it sounds like Channing Stripling has made a bit of a push toward... I mean, I know you are a big proponent for Jeremy Clark.
I am a big proponent for Jeremy Clark.
I agree, but it sounds like Stripling is at least giving Michigan a solid third corner. Because, you know, last year didn't quite come on as strong as some people expected. Was certainly well behind Clark.
Yes.
Although Clark was good, so that's Clark not was a good. Big hit on him.
I just remember back to that Minnesota game where Clark gets beat because of the back shoulder fade corner. Sorry, back shoulder corner, which does not exist.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
And then later in that game, Michigan almost loses it because Stripling's on the field and he bites on a double move in a situation where you absolutely should not be biting on a double move.
Yeah.
And, you know, that to overturn that kind of stuff, I think, would be difficult, because a lot of things that happened to Jeremy Clark last year I put in the Jordan Lewis category, where it's just like, yeah, okay, he didn't get his head around in time, but I don't think that it was realistic for him to think that was going to be 10 yards underthrown. I don't know. It is what it is.
Yeah.
We haven't heard anything about the safeties, and this could have been something where you do hear a lot about the safeties. So that's maybe good, right? Because the only thing you could hear about a safety is something bad. You know, like
there were a couple of mentions of like very long touchdown passes to Drake Harris and stuff like that, which I choose to mean that Drake Harris is finally becoming the deep threat that they want him to be, but could also mean like maybe the safeties weren't getting over the top as much.
Well, Drake Harris probably isn't playing the first team safeties either.
That's true. Although one of them was from O'Korn, I think. So they were rotating some guys in.
Yeah. A couple of negative notes about injury stuff is that Shulman got dinged up after one practice. And it's just, at this point, it's like, I don't really expect him to ever be healthy necessarily. If he is healthy, he's a guy who could really help out in that kind of blocky, catchy running role that Sione Huma no longer occupies. But just for him to go down after one practice and then have to work out on the sideline is like, meh. And then Chesson didn't really participate. Doesn't seem real likely that he will participate at all in spring.
Problem, they really don't need him to, I don't think. So
I mean,
you would like to develop a rapport with a new quarterback.
That would be nice. But they'll have some time to have some unofficial official practices later. Him.
I'm sure there will be some summer throwing sessions where it happens to be in the same building as John O'Korn.
Yeah, and he's down to like a pretty light knee brace, so I don't think that there's any question that he'll be full go for fall camp, which is nice. They're pretty much healthy right now, except for
Glasgow's still recovering and Chesson's recovering.
Yeah. So could be worse. Could be worse.
Yeah.
So what kind of shirt are you wearing? No shirt. He took it off. It's disgusting. It's fine. It's okay.
It's all right.
Ladies. Ace says nothing. Ace files a sexual harassment claim. This has been the MGO Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook, and I'd just like to apologize to our listener from Houghton.
But you're like too cool for Whole Foods. You have to go to like Plum Market.
I shop at Kroger, man. You're not paying me enough for that shit.